This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We listen to Hell with the Devil by Stryper, and we're going to talk about it today on Good Christian Fun.
Yeah, I'm a kid for you, bro.
Hard.
Consider the source.
Hey.
God, consider the source.
It's me.
How dare you!
I'm a fan of my mom.
It's me, the source.
Stop it, Saran!
I don't have friends. I got family.
Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin.
I'm Caroline.
And we're family here on GCF. Yes. Caroline and
you're GCF, your family.
We have become family. The guest is our family for as long as they're on the show. And as long as they are willing to ever come back, the listeners are our family, and that's the body, and that's the body of Christ in GCF, Good Christian Fun. Good Christian Fun is the podcast where we're talking about Christian pop culture, the music and the movies and the entertainment made for, made by, made about Christians and Christianity and the faith and our Lord. And yes, of course, that was Dominic Toretto, St. Dom of Furious fame, giving his blessing over the congregation this week.
You know, I saw all the photos. I saw the fun. I saw the costumes. Mm. I saw the fanfare. I saw the fucking envelopes. I saw everything.
Oh,
I loved it all. It was beautiful.
She was exhausted at a distance.
I was not. But what I didn't see was whether you liked the movie or not.
Yeah, it was okay. It was fine. Yes, we saw it.
Well, and only family would tell you if they hate your movie.
Hey, F9, it came out this past weekend. Biggest box office since the pandemic started. Biggest box office since Rise of Skywalker in December 2019. So the movies are back, baby.
Action Jackson over here.
No, Lights, Camera, Jackson. That's what you're referring to?
Yeah. Fuck
off. The movies are back. F9 comes right.
Box office numbers. I'll start with 1 through 10.
Race it into a theater near you. Do you think we could get Lights, Camera, Jackson on the show, Caroline?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Weiger says yes. Weiger, you've had Jackson on your show, haven't you?
He's yeah. Sorry to interject, please. But I was just so excited at the prospect. I think he'd be a great fit. And Jackson's a lovely young man, and he's a man now. You know, he's gone to college, and we had him on Doughboys, and I've met him a couple of times outside of the pod.
Oh,
always had great interactions.
Wow. Hey. So yeah. Weiger vouches for Jackson. We'll see how that take ages as more and more stuff about Jackson comes out, where he's kind of right-leaning, where his favorite sitcom is Back to You, the Patricia Heaton, Kelsey Grammer joint.
Hey, you know, someone's got to love her.
Oh, gracious.
He just likes classic TV.
Classic
TV. I think that's
TV.
That's what it is.
We all remember.
That's why he likes Last Man Standing.
That's right. Last Man Standing and Back to You. Classic television. I remember his wordless review with Booksmart a couple years ago. He said, "My mother said, you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all." And then it was just a bunch of pictures of Booksmart while he stood wordlessly staring at the camera.
Just stood there.
And I do recommend people watch this review. It is,
That's such a beautiful, understated burn that I don't think YouTubers use enough. Like, they're always saying too much. Say nothing.
Yeah.
Drag them to hell. I mean, if even Lights, Camera, Jackson can do it, you can.
Jackson understands it's about the spaces between. We're really Jackson stands on this podcast,
yeah,
whether it be Maine or Lights, Camera. We love a Jackson. And we love Stryper. We're here to talk about a song by Stryper called To Hell with the Devil, which is a song that, listeners, you've probably heard over 100 times if you've listened to this podcast, given our drops, because it is a drop that we've played almost every week on this show for the end portion. But now it's time to get into the actual song. But to do that, we're going to need a very special guest. So friends and folks, It's been a long time coming. You may know him from his own podcast, Doughboys, or How Did This Get Played? Everybody, give it the hell up for
Nick Liger!
Wow, he's here. He did it, Joe. Back and better than ever.
Liger, if I say, I want to ask a question first. If
I say
wow, is that like me taking your catchphrase?
No, I mean, I don't lay claim to wow.
Wow.
It's existed for a long time.
Okay. All right. That's very generous.
Yes.
Maybe a
popularizer of wow, but yeah, I think... Wow has been kind of a catch-all expression of wonder for centuries.
That's true. You brought it out from the underground.
That's what, especially in 2021, as we want to be more mindful and conscious of these things. Like, we want to platform causes,
credit the creators,
injustice that we care about. So, like, the Doughboys are platformers of Wow. Like, they may not have originated it, but they can elevate it and lift that voice up in a way where more people can understand the origin and the history of Wow. Which, you know,
great.
Wow ties into our show. Wow, of course, is the equivalent of the now that's what I call music series. There was Wow, the Wow series of albums that came out with all the greatest Christian hits.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. What did Wow stand for? World of Worship or something?
Well, I think in some cases it was World of Worship. World of Worship, which sounds just like the shittiest theme park.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a small world after all. It's even a smaller world because so many children from It's a Small World After All would not be included in the World of Worship.
No, they're not making it to heaven. We know that for
sure. Very unfortunate. Very sad. Weiger, thanks for joining us on the show, bud.
What a treat. What a thrill. I haven't thought about Striper in so long.
Yeah.
But it was, I would say Striper, and then the other group I talked to about, and I know this is something you've covered on the podcast, is DC Talk, were kind of two groups that were not...
Yes.
I didn't listen to them, but I was in Boy Scouts, and I had a very good friend whose parents were evangelical, and he was in elementary school, and he was super into Christian music. And so, like, I was always kind of, like, around that, and then always around kids who were trying to get me into it. Yeah. Of, like, you like Metallica. Striper is like Metallica, but it's Christian.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Like, they were, like, sales pitching you?
100%. It was, like, trying to get me. I got in, not to a Striper concert, but to a Christian concert. I got invited to it, and I declined. I should have gone. In hindsight, I should have gone just for
a great show,
the memory and the story.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was just like a little bit weirded out by it. I was like, nah, I don't want to go to this Christian concert.
Yeah, because where was this geographically? Because you grew up, you're like a Southern California boy, right?
Yeah, so this is Lakewood, California, and, you know, we're adjacent, though, to Orange County, which I believe Striper is from Orange County.
Orange County.
Who would have thunk?
So as liberal as people think of California, it's really just L.A. and San Francisco. Everywhere else is like deep red. And even Orange County, which is kind of getting light blue, and San Diego is starting to get like a little bit. They're still like conservative parts of the state. And so Orange County, yeah, there's a big... You know, there's mega churches there. There's the Crystal Cathedral there.
I'd say most of the like mega churches in California are probably in Orange County or in San Diego. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was right adjacent to that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you were right in the cultural soup of Christianity was around.
Listen, it was OC Supertones. It was so much of the ska movement at that time in Orange County. No doubt. Gwen Stefani, Jordan Morris, a young boy also involved in youth groups at the time. Nicholas Weiger as well. What was your like history with religion, though? I assume you might have grew up in an irreligious household or an agnostic household of some sort.
So my mom's side of the family was pretty religious, Episcopalian, though. So it's like kind of an L-I-T-E light sort of Christianity. Mm-hmm. You know, it's it's like a diet Catholicism. And so we kind of had that as we went to a church every Sunday as I was a kid growing up, and that basically stopped as I was a teenager. I think once my brother moved out of the house, my parents just generally stopped trying, and that was part of it. So it was just like you know, when I was there by myself, my brother's 5 years older than me, then religion started to kind of get factored out entirely. My dad, I never got a sense of, he's a man of science. I always got a sense that he was kind of vaguely agnostic, but also just like kind of like the idea of God. And my mom, I never really understood. I think she was just like used to going to church. But her parents, up until their death, were, you know, very religious and regular churchgoers. And on her side of the family, a lot of people are involved in the church. On my dad's side of the family, like his older brother and my aunt are, you know, still very churchy. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. So yeah. You're really close to it, even if you aren't, like, steeped in it yourself. Did you ever have, like, a devout streak, like, while you were going to church every Sunday, or maybe in youth group or anything? Or, like, did any of it, like, you're like, yeah, actually, I do want to, like, go all for it?
It was usually more of a, either I was bored with it, or I was like kind of fascinated with it, but kind of like fascinated in the sense of like, oh, this is interesting, more so than like, I super believe this, you know?
Yeah.
But I think I was probably like, I had like an annoying atheist phase for sure when I was like, you know, as a teenager. And then I kind of grew out of that and was like, this is so fucking obnoxious. I hate this kind of person. I don't want to be this kind of person.
Who were the people you were like reading or listening to that made you like be more atheist or made you?
Great question. And I was really into science just in general, like reading about science. And so there was this magazine, Skeptic Magazine, that was started off as I was a subscriber to Skeptic Magazine, one of the few children who subscribed to Skeptic Magazine. And there's a joke in a Simpsons episode where Lisa is reading an issue of Junior Skeptic. It's like kind of like this weird, you know, obscure publication that's for science nerds. And it began. So here's part of my turn is that it began like away from that movement is that it began as kind of like a general skepticism towards, you know, hey, this fortune teller's a fraud. This person who has a line where a psychic hotline is a fraud, and they're scamming people out of their life savings. Like that was the big crux of the skeptic movement, was like exposing charlatans. And it kind of generalized also to just like hey, religion is just, there's no scientific basis for this. But it was not as hardcore. Weirdly, 9/11 made it like this very vigorously anti-religion and anti-Islam movement in general. And that for me, like, just really turned me off of it. Like, I don't want to be associated with these openly Islamophobic, like people just basically saying the reason that there is bad stuff in the world is because of religion. Like that kind of became. Yeah. And guys who I was reading at the time, like a Michael Shermer or a Sam Harris is like a big Islamophobe now, you know, and that was like his whole thing was just like, oh, it's rationale. It's science. And then it turned to this whole thing of the new atheism just became this anti-religion catch-all, which I just found like so, like, I don't know, just kind of shitty and unappealing, you know?
Yeah, and like in contradiction sort of with just being a skeptic in general rather than,
right,
I don't know, like it's such an obvious blanket statement. It's like if you had actually educated yourself on Islam or were cared about it, you know, from like an academic point of view, you would know that that's not like the norm either, to be a terrorist or whatever.
Yeah, so that kind of pulled me away from it. But that was when, you know, I'm old as shit, so that then I'm like an adult at this point. And then I'm just sort of like kind of, I'd say kind of my approach to religion since then is just kind of like, I don't know, I think it's interesting, and I like I have a Bible, like I like to, you know, I like to just think of it, like refer to it as a text. And
when do you refer to it as a text?
You know, I'll like,
what is the context for open?
That? I'll just look through it and just sort of like read a little bit. I don't know.
Like when you're stuck,
it's like when
you're writing a sketch or something, or working one of your writing jobs, and you like can't crack a certain story beat. You're like, ooh, okay, let's get into Isaiah or something. how the greats do it? How did it work for them?
I guess I mean it more in the sense of, like, it's a foundational text for the Western canon, right? Mm-hmm, it's just like basically everything that's been written since then has been influenced either directly or indirectly by the Bible and its existence. And so, like, I don't know. I appreciate it on that level.
Yeah, I don't even know how I would go about trying to comprehend the totality of the Western canon, because, like, the Bible is interesting to us because of our anecdotal experience with it, yes, and how it, like, helped or hurt, yeah, us on a personal level, that I even with this much distance and deconstruction objectivity, I still don't know how to just, like, behold as, like, a piece of literature or something where it's like, oh, the beats, right, of this, or, like, you know, whatever, you know, the Joseph Campbellian stuff that you can apply to it, or that was applied to it, maybe even in its conception. I wouldn't know, yeah, at all how to behold it like that.
It would be like being a J.K. Rowling expert, like, your whole life, and then going back to Harry Potter and just trying to, like, read it like a book, you know? It's just like, oh, there's just so much influence, right, yeah, and, like, baggage on this thing now that it's, like, really hard for me to just read it for, like, the pure fun of it, or for, like, just, yeah, for the literature aspect of it.
Yeah, you guys did on, yeah, Doughboys, you did a whole month dedicated to religious restaurants, right? This was it Rocktober Blessed?
That's right.
Was that the name of the marathon or the festival?
Right. Festival. Every October we do, like, a theme month, and it's some riff on Oktoberfest. So yeah, we did. It was either Rocktober Blessed or Oktober Blessed. I don't remember nightmare of a portmanteau it was, but it was, yeah, we reviewed, you know, like, your In-N-Out burgers, your Chick-fil-A's, your restaurants that have any sort of connection to religion, either in their founding or in their, you know, have you guys heard of Pizza Ranch?
No.
Tell us about this place.
So Pizza Ranch is a Western themed. We didn't get to cover it because it was the travel was too onerous, but we plan to cover it when we're touring in the future. But it's a Western themed pizza place that's also Christian, and it's a chain that is in the Midwest. I think it's mainly in Minnesota, but there's also an outpost in Colorado and Iowa. Maybe it's mostly in Iowa and there's an outpost in Minnesota.
Huh, yeah, Midwest.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm fascinated.
Headquarters
are fascinated by it.
So centuries, right, and centuries ago, a Mario in Italy was making pizza, and little did he know that someday pizza, well, the meaning could be anything. The cultural could be anything.
But maybe
it's going to be Western and Christian.
You're having a too narrow of a view of,
yes,
this, because maybe a Mario in Italy was like, I hope they use this for the gospel one day and to spread
and
the kingdom.
And also, I love
a
Cowboys.
That would rule.
That's what fascinates, yes, to me is like the trinity of these three different concepts that seem to have no real connection,
yeah,
of like cowboy, pizza, Bible. Like, it's like, what, like, what is
loosely
the
American
unifying, besides just like the founder, yeah, liked all three. Yeah, I guess they're all American. Yeah.
And Cracker Barrel, I know.
That's
Cracker
so
Barrel
funny.
Has some Christian roots because,
oh yeah,
One of,
yes,
the artists of CCM that we've covered a lot on this show is a man named Michael W. Smith, who did at one point release a couple of albums of his reimaginings of hymns that were exclusively available at Cracker Barrel locations. That was a thing that occurred. But
I forgot about that.
I am curious if you guys on the show, like, understood anything more about, like, the sort of, not trend, but I guess the infrastructure of chain restaurants being used as vessels for that sort of, like, religious, whatever you want to call it, imperialism or colonization. Like, of course,
right,
there's the Bible verses on the bottom of the cups that you get at In-N-Out. At Chick-fil-A, one of my favorite low-key sneaky things that they do is, you know, in addition to, they would have, like, explicit, like, religious themed kids meal toys with the kids meals. If you go into,
oh,
the,
yes,
restaurant, if you go into, like, you know, use the bathroom or something, they will be playing instrumental versions of Christian songs. So nothing where it's like you would,
no,
know the lyrics, and, like, you could hear the lyrics to it. But I remember last time I was in a Chick-fil-A bathroom many years ago, because I would never go in there now, being such an ally as I am.
Not
today.
Once, not a,
no,
single time.
No, not even once. But they were playing,
I didn't,
like,
buy a bottle of Chick-fil-A
version.
Sauce at the grocery store.
Yeah, that's
yesterday.
Right.
Yeah.
I definitely don't have some leftover Chick-fil-A sauces in my cabinet right now.
Cut
from
it out. Cut it out of my life.
A nugget tray that my friend Anthony brought over for movie night two nights ago. But the last time I was there, they were playing like an instrumental version of like a Hillsong song. I think it was Oceans
that
they were playing while I was using the bathroom.
Wow. There. And like only other Christians would even recognize that music for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So is it supposed to be a little bit of a dog whistle, or is it supposed to be like, well, if we're going to play any music at Chick-fil-A, we want it to be a blessing, whether they know it or not.
I'm just trying to even think of like analogs to how those places do business and then like impart values. Because obviously now, like,
yes,
corporate America is going to virtue signal in all these different ways, in ways I think like we would affirm on paper as like technically good and positive, like, you know, Pride Month stuff, which is like you affirm it, even though like the corporate manifestation of it is like disgusting and hollow. But like, I don't understand why fast food restaurants have like zeroed in on that in particular. And I guess mm-hmm. Hobby Lobby is like the only analog I could think of to that sort of thing, where Hobby Lobby is mm-hmm. explicitly Christian. A lot of the stuff that they shill out and like their corporate values.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you'd expect it to be more places, or you'd expect it to be more pervasive, but I guess it's, I don't know. The food thing is, it became such a culture war, I think, because so many of these chains are regional. I do think that's a big part of it. And it's sort of like, you know, Chick-fil-A is like, it's a Bible Belt chain. Like, that's where it's all, that's where all its money is made. Yeah, it kind of dots across the country these days, but for the longest time, the bulk of its business, the bulk of its consumer base is from the South. And it's like, I think they were, I don't know, maybe, I don't know how cynical it is. I don't know if it was a cynical calculation or just as honest reflection of the values of the Cathy family, maybe a combo. But they bet
on
that.
To be fair,
and
the Cathy family that Weiger's talking about is of the cartoon lady who loves chocolate and says axe.
That's right.
She does run Chick-fil-A, and she is a fervent militant Christian.
Corporate nightmare empire, yeah. I'd say the other...
Yeah, her and her husband, Irving.
The other kind of Christian business holdout that's not a chain, but I'd say whatever town you're in, whatever local non-chain coffee shop is there, just double check, because often I think they are also run by Christians.
You're right,
as like a social community alternative to bars. Mm-hmm. That's where all the Christians hang out. At least I know I did too. And to the point where like Kevin and I both know which Christian coffee shop or which coffee shop in Pasadena is Christian and where you can reliably see Bible studies hanging out and stuff like that. So it kind of becomes like an extension of a church building sometimes, and is often used for just like random church activity.
For sure.
One thing I wanted to point out on the subject of fast food stuff, virtue signaling, how they impart their values commercially and publicly, is of course, I'm sure you saw, Weiger, maybe you saw it too, Caroline, that Burger King is sort of trolling Chick-fil-A for Pride Month.
Right.
They said,
really?
Yeah, they, you know, they put out a tweet earlier in the month, June 3rd, you know, the Chick King, the hashtag Chick-fil-A or Burger King says LGBTQ rights during Pride Month, even on Sundays, parenthetical eyes emoji, as in like we're open on Sundays. Your chicken sandwich craving can do good. We are making a donation to @HRC for every Chicken King sandwich sold. Burger King will contribute 40 cents to the Human Rights Campaign maximum donation.
Wait, Hillary Rodham Clinton?
Yeah. Funneling into the Epstein Murder Fund.
Oh my God.
I'm in.
Taking blood from children so they can live forever.
Yeah, which that is an interesting, weird new dimension to like the chicken sandwich wars that have been going on, I guess, the last couple of years.
I think that's so smart, though, to make it all about the chicken sandwich, you know, of like... How bad
right.
do you want one?
Exactly.
It's clearly, I mean, it's you were saying this earlier, Kevin, like it's cynical. It's like you know, they're doing it because they think it's going to benefit them financially. It's not an altruistic act, but it's also good that we're at the point where that's good for them to do. You know what I mean? It feels like progress. We're at the point where we're like a craven corporation that will, you know, fucking kill a certain percentage of their employees if it will boost their profit margins by 3% is like saying like, oh, it's good for us to acknowledge, you know, LGBT rights. I don't know. I always feel conflicted about these things, but I don't want to go like too hard on a place that is like
right
doing, I guess, the right thing, just whatever their motivation, you know?
Yeah, technically you can affirm it. I guess it's just an issue of ethical consumption in that sense.
Yes. So
like what you can live with. And then making your way up to the top of whatever the restaurant, whatever the corporation, whatever the company is, where there will be some line of corruption at some point where it,
sure,
where it strays off. With Chick-fil-A, it's a pretty straight shot, and you can make your peace,
yes,
or not with it if you want to. I'm sure with Burger King, you can find some sort of something to object to, yeah, on some moral or ethical level.
I think there's even a Burger King tweet from this year that's like people were like mad about. So there's always, even on that level, but yeah.
Oh, that's the women belong in the kitchen tweet?
Oh, yeah.
That's right. No, yeah, right. That was a really, really tone deaf attempt. I think that it's just like, all the way I make peace with it is that all these companies are monstrous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the cliche that I find helpful is there's no ethical consumption under capitalism. It's a systemic problem. Everyone at the top of all of these fucking fast food chains is some fucking huge piece of shit who is, you know, like is grieving their friend Jeffrey Epstein. You know what I mean? It's like they're all like fucking just awful, awful human beings who you're putting money in their pockets by buying their products. But that's true of whatever. It's like there's no way to escape these things. Mm-hmm. Even if you're just like, I'm not going to use Amazon anymore, or watch Amazon Prime, good luck finding a website that doesn't have this back-end Amazon Web Services. These things are just pervasive and omnipresent, and there's no escape from it. So have what you like and deal with it on your own terms.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if I'll 100% stand behind this because I'm not super well researched on In-N-Out, but I worked at In-N-Out for several years.
Wow.
And as an employee, they are one of the higher paying fast food jobs, which I'm sure you guys know. Like, they have always paid above minimum wage, which is a low bar, you know, to be fair. But I always appreciated that. And they gave a Christmas gift to the employees every year. And it wasn't like, oh, here's a coupon to In-N-Out. It was like a cookie jar or a chess set or a blanket,
right,
or just like something kind of nice. And they also did a free fair for the employees to come. And it was like a carnival setting, basically. And you could bring your family and it was all free. And so I don't know, as far as like, at least like bad labor practices, I think In-N-Out is also a better bet if you want to spend your money well. You are still supporting, you know, a billionaire, Lindsay, and like that whole family and everything.
Yeah.
So it's not an airtight thing, but they do treat their workers better, and at least at the location I was at, than most, like, you know, your average Chick-fil-A or McDonald's, maybe.
My jaw was agape the whole time you were talking about your time as an In-N-Out employee. That's amazing. I'm starstruck. I love In-N-Out Burger.
Starstruck.
It's a childhood favorite of mine. And yeah, I do like, I you know, individual actors are like, you know, sometimes Costco is another one where like Costco employees for the most part are pretty well compensated. And I think they tend to stay, you know, for much longer than the average retail worker, as In-N-Out Burger workers tend to stay much longer than the average food service worker, and I think have health insurance benefits.
Yeah, a lot of the people I worked with had a whole career at In-N-Out, like that from high school all the way on, and they were able to rise up, and they hire from the inside a lot. And again, like, there are cynical reasons for that as well. You have a better workforce, you have a more engaged workforce, you're paying them just a little bit more to keep them hooked, you know, than they would at any other restaurant, but it still does benefit the employees.
So in summary, In-N-Out, one of the good ones?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Again, I don't know if I would 100% stand by it. But if you're like, you know, edging your bets a little bit on like what you want to do.
Cut to the comment section for this episode post. In-N-Out gave my mom cancer.
Yeah. In-N-Out worked my fingers literally to the bone.
And yes, I would also subscribe to the idea Weiger put forth of there's no ethical consumption under capitalism. But I would also add to it, there is ethical consumption under Patreon. Go to patreon.com/doughboys or /goodchristianfund.
We have no employees to abuse.
If you
want to
know exactly where your money is going. So these two doidoys right here.
Directly to the top.
Oh, boy.
Weiger, I thought it was such a good point that you pointed out that Chick-fil-A is a regional chain as well. And I think that's so key in understanding why they're really prominent with their Christian vibe, is because maybe in the Bible Belt, no one would like really raise an eyebrow for it, even if they weren't Christian. It's kind of like, right. Well, yeah, this is just how people are here. But I wonder, you know, as Chick-fil-A has grown into more secular states or just different cultural worlds, where being a Christian company is actually like hurting their profits more than it was helping them in the South. I wonder if they'll like, well, clearly they already have, because remember when they made that statement about like, oh, yeah, we don't donate to anti-homophobic, you know, like
right.
causes anymore. That's
anti-homophobic.
Totally separate. Yeah. Only pro.
Pro-homophobic.
We don't. Yeah. Thank you. But yeah.
Yeah. I wonder too. It's, you know, last time I checked, I think Chick-fil-A was at the top or near the top of per store sales still. It's still a wildly profitable chain.
Whoa.
And part of, I think, how they, part of their strategy, I think, is artificial scarcity, where they don't have too many locations in a given market. So they're the long lines of the drive through. In-N-Out Burger does the same thing, as you know, from working there. I think from a, so yeah, I don't know if like the Hollywood Boulevard, is that, there's a Sunset Boulevard or Hollywood Boulevard location right in
yeah.
the heart of Hollywood,
Sunset
right?
Sunset and Highland, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like that one is still always packed, and you would think if there was some sort of a backlash to the company's founder's politics, that it would be reflected there of all places,
totally. Sure.
But
yeah.
I don't know. But yes, Caroline, you're right, though, In-N-Out Burger, by contrast, being a product of Southern California and staying all in the left coast for the most part, it's like has to be very cryptic with its, mm-hmm.
yes,
you know,
exactly.
religious. It's like a little Easter egg. You have to hunt for it. You have to know that it's there. And yeah, you might not even know what it means if you're not someone who's Christian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Chick-fil-A is based out of Georgia, which obviously has a much different temperature as far as all that stuff goes. So that's
right.
going to shape it for sure.
Fascinating.
Man. Well, speaking of a different temperature, let's go to hell after this break. Weiger, thanks for sharing your story and your religious upbringing and your early childhood skepticism, shattering post 9/11. Hey, something nice to come out of 9/11. It wasn't all bad, right?
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Let's take a break and we'll be right back with more good Christian fun.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome back to Good Christian Fun. It's time for another edition of Singles Ministry.
It's Singles Ministry.
I went back to the old mix, Caroline, because the other one was a little too much, a little too extra. Singles Ministry is the format on our show in which we take one single song and talk about it. Not an album, not a whole 2-hour movie that we make our guests watch, starring Kevin Sorbo. that shaves hours off of their lives. But it's one single song, usually less than 5 minutes, usually. And this week's song is To Hell With the Devil by Stryper. But before we get into that, Wargie, you were talking about generally your exposure to Christian pop culture through Boy Scouts, yes. through your friend that tried to get you into DC Talk and be like, this is actually cool, man.
Yes.
Also on the subject of Christian pop culture, Christian video games. That is a yes. teeny tiny subgenre that's existed in the industry for a little bit. You yourself have played, I believe on your show, How Did This Get Played? Bible Adventures? Is that what the...
That's right. We covered Bible Adventures, which was an unlicensed game for the original Nintendo, the 8-bit Nintendo. And this was a game I actually played as a kid via one of those... My friend whose parents,
oh
whose
my
mom
gosh.
Was evangelical, he wow. had this game. Mm. And they sold him at... I'm sure you're... why would I...
Lifeway.
Yeah, I was going to say like the... Yeah, Lighthouse. Yeah, I was going to say, of course you know the Lighthouse. Stores. It was... And they were sold at those, and it was, like, again, not authorized by Nintendo. They just made this bootleg cartridge on their own and sold them at Christian stores, and moms bought them in droves. It was a hugely selling game.
Crazy.
Now, it was purely, talk about corporate cynicism, this was purely a cynical ploy. It was originally a secular developer that was making, like, ninja games or whatever.
Oh my
they were
gosh.
Making, like, and they were just sort of like, well, fuck it, there's a void in the marketplace, let's make a Christian game. They made Bible Adventures, and Bible Adventures consists of a David and Goliath game, there's a Noah game, and then there's a transporting baby Jesus game. And and it's all three games in one cart. They're all barely playable, and they have really no connection to the Bible whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Transporting baby Jesus.
Just to give an idea to Caroline of the kind of aesthetic value of Bible Adventures, this is a lot of it.
Oh, my God. Oh,
looks
God.
Like complete shit.
Yeah.
It does look
yeah,
like so that it's so dark. Oh, boy.
Just Noah's Ark animals. Is the one that most feels like a game, and you're literally going around just stacking, you know, like a
goat. Oh, is it baby
goat.
Moses? Like down the river.
Oh, is that who it was? It might have been Baby Moses.
I think it's Baby
yes,
Moses.
Yes, it's Baby Moses. Yeah.
Yes. I love Baby Jesus, though. It's like you just
that would have been fun.
Fleeing.
$44.95.
Oh, my God. From Wisdom Tree. That looks made up. I love when secular companies make Christian content like that, like mm-hmm. a secular cash grab. One, I just think. I'm like, why would you even try?
Right.
And two, it's so funny to see their interpretation of like what these should be doing, whereas a really important piece to creating most like Christian pop culture is it is for proselytizing primarily or affirming to the Christian audience like a story they already want to hear, you know?
Yes.
So it reminds me of that that like High School Musical knockoff we watched, Kevin.
Sunday
that
was School like, Musical, yes.
Yes, yes, yes. It was not made by a Christian production company, but it was like a Christian musical movie.
Yes.
And because of that, the themes were so bizarre and like not really like churchy at all. It's kind of great.
It's kind of like that B-movie, direct-to-video production company where their whole thing is, their business model is predicated off of confusing the consumer. So something with a sound like name like Transmorphers. Or right.
Finding Demo.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Triassic Park. Right?
Sure.
It has no real connection to, like I said, it has no real connection to the Bible, and it was... I as far as why they did it, it was just like it was purely for commercial purposes. I looked it up. It sold 350,000 copies. So in this
wow.
era, a mega hit, hugely
yeah.
popular game.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just like it was the same thing when kids were like to me, hey, you like metal. I bet you'll like Stryper. It was the same thing where like moms and dads were like, hey, our son likes Nintendo. I bet he'll like this Bible-based video game. And so they bought it. And it like that was enough. They like parents didn't know how to evaluate the quality of a video game in those era, and mm-hmm. kids didn't either. They were just like, okay, I'll play this one for a little bit. This one's boring. I'll play.
Yeah, it was
Cuber.
All a treat either way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. real quick, the developer Wisdom Tree was formerly called Color Dreams, and before they opportunistically flipped to be this Christian game company, Color Dreams made the games Captain Cosmic, Challenge of the Dragon, Menace Beach, and Mission Cobra. So they're basically just making like these like very generic arcadey action games. And then they're like, well, these aren't good. These aren't standing out in the marketplace. Everyone's buying Castlevania and Contra instead. Let's try the Christian thing. And it worked out for them.
That's crazy.
Yeah, of course it did. But it does seem like a genre that is all but dead. Not that it was ever living and thriving, but I don't believe anything would ever sell 350,000 copies as Bible Adventures did back in the day. I think consumers are probably savvier to that, because if you just look at a list of quote unquote Christian video games that have been released recently, it is pretty desolate. Stained Glass,
really?
Adam's Venture, Colon Chronicles, you know, Bible Gems, Bible Crush, which I'm sure are Candy Crush little knockoffs. There's one coming out later this year that I've never heard of, Jesus in the Matrix, Life Academy. So look forward to that at some point hitting some sort of console.
Jesus in the Matrix.
But that sort of business model, I feel like, just does not work. I don't know if it's like in an oversaturation or saturation in a good way of choice and overabundance of choice within that field. But that, I don't think, and you would be able to speak better to this, Weigar, than I could, but I don't think you can confuse consumers the same way that you could back in that day.
Yeah, I think the demographic that plays games is still too young and too savvy. I think that probably when it reaches the era where we're in retirement homes and there's a Nintendo 64 there with GoldenEye for the old timers to play, like when that happens, when gamers start to become senior citizens, I think we might start to see more of this sort of like these shovelware fucking garbage games in the same way that these Kevin Sorbo movies exist, you know?
Well, we'll find out. We'll try to play. You know, there was that Jesus RPG that was going to come out. It was a first person's perspective of you were Jesus. Yeah. And so it would like you would like try to do miracles and make water into wine. They kept showing trailers for that for years. I don't know if they ever released it, but would love to play if they did.
That feels so wrong. Gotta know what Jesus looks like in that game. Very curious. In this day and age.
What his hand? You mean like what color his skin is when you outstretch your hands?
Yeah.
See if it's actually accurate.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about Striper. To hell with the devil. Striper is a band, as we said before, came out of Orange County, came up in the 80s. It was these two brothers, the Sweet Brothers, and they had different revolving members kind of come in and out of the band over the years. At one point, they totally cratered in the 90s. They have had a sort of revival, and they sort of exist as like an IP, like almost a brand now, where it's just kind of different members in and out. You can find recent performances of To Hell with the Devil by Striper from as late as 2019, 2018. It doesn't quite have the same effect, impact, cachet as it once did in the 1980s, but it does exist. And it was kind of like what we're saying, as is the strategy with marketing so many of these bands and so much of this Christian content. It was Christian Kiss, essentially, or definitely pulling from influences like Poison or Bride, bands like that from that particular time. I myself have never been into that secular or Christian, that particular genre of music. Weigar, I don't know if that's something that you were ever interested in yourself.
Oh, yeah. I was a huge metal kid. And I loved Metallica. It was my favorite band growing up. I loved, you know, I loved your overtly satanic bands, your Sepulturas and your Slayers, mm-hmm. your Napalm Deaths. Like, you know, like I was like even into those as kind of in sort of an edgelord sense. Liked Megadeth. liked Ozzy Osbourne. And I think but also hair metal. Like, this is like a very much a hair metal band. So like kind of like your Def Leppards, your Poisons, Warrant, I liked all that stuff too, you know, even though that was a little early for me. So like, yeah, I was totally into it. And Striper is like, I don't know, it like you listen to Hell with the Devil, or really any of their songs, but this one in particular, it's like, it sounds like it could just be an Iron Maiden song. Like, if you're not listening to the lyrics too closely, it sounds very authentic to the metal of the era. Is one of the brothers the vocalist?
One of the brothers, one of the Sweet Brothers, yes, I believe
the Sweetie
so.
Boys.
Yeah. One of our sweet little Sweetie Boys. Michael Sweet, yes, he is lead vocals.
So he has pipes. He's got those sort of, operatic vocals that like a Bruce Dickinson had. So he's like, it's very much a hair metal like anthem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And speaking to the authenticity of the sound, like you were saying, I will just read a little passage from the Encyclopedia of Contemporary Christian Music, Mark Allen Powell, Oxford Bible, for this one.
It's, Weiger, did you have a copy of that as
Yeah, you have a copy
well?
Of that they use for reference, right, as part of the Western canon?
Page through. Yeah,
I wish.
The Western canon.
This particular anecdote is lovely to me. Whatever the influences, Stryper slowly began to develop a repertoire of overtly evangelical songs, because they kind of started not. They started as a different sort of band. Called Rox Regime, and that was ROXX, of course, the Rox Regime, and it was not
right.
an overtly Christian band, but I love this part. Nevertheless, when they prepared a demo for presentation to Enigma Records, which was a division of Capitol, they edited the songs, taking out all explicitly religious lyrics. Then, after they were signed with the general market label, they presented the company with newly recorded versions of the same songs with explicit Christian messages and text.
Oh my gosh.
There is some question as to whether they had to be so sneaky. Wes Hind, the head of Enigma, who signed the band, recalls their tape just knocked my socks off. The songs were great, and I was so impressed with the tonal quality, the background vocals, and just what it all sounded like. I had no idea they were a Christian band, and they did not volunteer that information. Still, the discovery was made, Hind said he felt in no way deceived. Who cares? They're a great rock band. It's no big deal. But then he adds, of course, in time, it would seem that everyone else thought it was a much bigger deal than I did, because they were a fairly big band. This album that this song comes from sold 2 million copies. So this was not a fringe sort of thing. And they were big enough that at one point Metallica was opening for them. That's where like their careers intersected at a certain point. Obviously,
so
Metallica
wild.
Would go on to have a little more staying power. But yeah, that was who Stryper was. But I love the idea. I love the bait and switch.
The lie.
Which is actually how we got this podcast on HeadGum. We told Jake and Amir, we want to do a podcast called Good Fun, and we just talk about pop culture that we grew up with.
We told
him
it was about comic books. Mm-hmm. Yeah. they were
pop
like,
culture
yeah,
and comic books. So
I was going to say, when I was a kid, for some reason, I had a book of photos that was of all glam rock metal bands. And I think it was like probably something we got at Urban Outfitters or something, you know. But I burned into my brain was the image of Stryper in that, because they were in that book. And it was a photo of them where they're wearing their like leather jackets, but they have these huge white crosses like emblazoned on the chest, and then a soft focus. So it's just like glowing.
Mm.
And I remember the book, whatever the caption was on it, was like very rude about it and was making fun of them. And I remember even as a kid being like, Stryper's my favorite band in this book.
Having heard how many of their songs at that point?
A zero. And I was like, stay strong, Stryper. I thought they were, talk about counterculture to be a Christian band in the metal world.
And that sort of allegiance that you felt to them, that's the power of family, as Brother Vin was talking
family,
to us about.
Yes,
absolutely.
Exactly.
So let's at least hear a little bit of a sample of this song. Gonna try to time it out, because the intro does last quite a length of time. I've fast forwarded to 30 seconds in. We're very close to something starting, so here we go. Not yet, almost, maybe now.
Horns. Yes.
Okay, that's probably good.
So Kevin has the as his background now, Striper in their outfits, including comparing one of the members' facial features, it looks like, to Ted Cruz. But they've got their black and yellow out get-ups on. It's very superheroic. It's very X-Men. And I remember that was a thing that was I thought was so cool about them is that their fucking wardrobe.
A little Bumblebee, yes.
Their wardrobe is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, they definitely had an aesthetic, and they chose it, you know. A strong color palette goes a long way. Jack White talking about the strongest colors.
So
red,
true.
Black, white. That's all him and Meg wore. And white stripes. And Striper walked so white stripes could run. I don't know. Whatever. So to hell with the devil, a very...
Do you think the rotating members, other than the Sweet Brothers of Striper, were also Christian? Or were they kind of just like guys who just wanted a job and were like, Jesus is cool, you know? Maybe a combo?
Well, there was some talk around this because there was... I believe, at least according to Mr. Mark Allen Powell in this encyclopedia, there was controversy about how authentic their faith was at different points. Because after To Hell with the Devil and one of their follow-up albums, they did go on to put out albums where it's like no religious lyrics to speak of. And then they spun that in the press as like, well, not because we're not Christians anymore, but just we wanted to try a different thing, which if it would have worked out,
wow.
You know, who knows? And then, of course, things came out like some of them had substance abuse issues, which, you know, is fine. But in that particular space of contemporary Christian music is way more controversial. Like it's a virtue in just general rock spaces, and it becomes much more of a flagrant vice and almost like a fireable offense in the CCM spaces. So as far as the authenticity of the other guy's faith, I don't know. I mean, for some of the most successful popular Christian bands in the world, it continues to be a question of how much investment or buy-in that they do have about it. So I don't know, with the Sweet Brothers, I would buy that they were consistent the whole time. With the other guys, who the hell knows? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read an interview, there was like linked to their Wikipedia page. It was a more recent one. Or it was right after Striper had officially broke up. And I think it was, I want to get this right. I don't think it was one of the Sweet Brothers talking. I think it was like
one of the Sweetie Pies.
Gaines. Yeah, something like that. And he had said something about like, yeah, we didn't like being pegged as a Christian band. You know, the same old thing of like, we're a band that happens to be all Christians, not a Christian band. We don't like that.
Right.
And I think they also very much resented the Christian, like, really, really high standard that the Christian audience has for their musicians and who they perform with and what they sing and who they care about and what they don't sing and everything. So, I think they must have started really strong with that because they believed in it, but maybe also because they knew, like, ooh, this is a good differentiator as well, you know, to be, like, repping God, and especially in such, like, a Satan-loving, you know, like, brand that
it's
metal
a good
has.
Hook.
It's a good hook, and I think they just didn't expect it to backfire in that, like, Christians would then try to hold them to this standard that they didn't even want in the first place, you know?
It's the metal equivalent of Opposite Day.
Yeah.
To hell with the devil. I thought we love that guy here.
Right.
Uh-huh. He's like, I want to go to hell with the devil. No. Yeah. And also, isn't this devil horns, now that I think about it, the rock and roll gesture?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I guess maybe they would do it down.
Wow.
Like they would go down.
Yeah.
To hell.
Or they
just
they cross them.
Although I do love.
What I always heard was that was devil horns. And then also, if you turned it on end, it was 666.
Oh.
Like it was like the number six.
Three sixes.
You got to have a friend with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that requires a lot of shadow puppeting to get to that particular satanic place. But
it's a stretch.
I guess you get
but
there.
But Satan appreciates the effort every time.
I'm reading in this. He loves it. He knows.
He's like, thanks.
He knows that it's a little bit, you know, you're going a long way for the old big red guy, and he appreciates it. I'm reading from this encyclopedia again, just talking about their particular controversies, and I love this clarification. Michael Sweet would say, looking back, it wasn't a pretty sight. We were living the same lifestyle offstage that we were condemning on stage. And then pressed for more detail, he said there was a lot of drinking and partying, though he makes clear, no one was doing drugs and no one was cheating on their wives. God stepped in and prevented that. But if the whole thing had gone on, it might have degenerated into that. So he made clear, like, yeah, we got drunk out of our minds.
We were cool.
But we were faithful. We were wise guys through and through, all the way to the very bitter end.
I mean, one of us has to become run for political office eventually and be a really prominent, what is he, senator?
And go take a vacation to fucking, where was he going? Maui?
Cancun.
Cancun, baby. Spring break.
Oh, boy.
Come on, spring break with me. The lyrics of the song are, don't speak of the devil. He's no friend of mine. Which, when someone's not a friend of mine, I do say, don't even talk about that person. That's kind of my approach with that sort of thing as well. Mm-hmm. To turn from him is what we've got in mind. Just a liar and a thief. The word tells us so. We like him to know where he can go to hell with the devil. When things are going wrong, you know to blame. He will always live up to his name being devil. He's never been the answer. There's a better way. And we are here to rock you and say. And that is the full entirety of the lyrics. It's essentially a haiku of a metal song.
Love it.
Short.
No mention of God. No saying, and here's the opposite. Here's the better alternative. Just simply not devil.
But what Stryper gets, Caroline, I think. And by the way, Stryper, the name is based on the verse Isaiah 53:5. By his stripes we're healed. So God is the Stryper in that sense. Although alternatively, acronym is salvation through redemption, yielding peace, encouragement, and righteousness. Which is essentially like S.H.I.E.L.D. in Marvel, where it's like, you just wanted to mean Stryper.
You worked backwards.
They retrofitted that.
But what Stryper
gets, it's like
gets
when the Senate passes an omnibus bill. The America First Act, and they all stand for some shit.
They understand, the Sweetie Boys understood that it's not even so much common goal bonding, but common enemy bonding that brings people together. Someone with some recent experience of this, I can affirm that this is true.
We don't like that this is human nature, but a common enemy is far more strong than worshiping the Lord. I mean, you got to get people on board with so much to get them to believe in God.
I mean, what's more fun after after leaving a party? Is it saying, man, Josh was so cool, he seems like a really nice guy, I love Josh, with your friend on the drive home? Or is it, dude, Josh is a fucking rube. Why are we friends with Josh? Who gives
a
shit?
Yeah, that's true.
He's like
so
a naive
easy to
man.
Con.
He's a rube.
Clearly.
Amen.
He's prey to grifters. I'm remembering now, I haven't thought about this in a while, but in high school, we used to go to, I was going to punk shows, and this is in Long Beach, California, and they would have, there was this church that was that had punk shows on, a weeknight. Mm-hmm. Me and my friends would go, and there'd be a bunch of, punk rock kids there, but the band would play, and then they'd take an intermission, and then a pastor would come on and give a sermon. And it was like a honey trap to like get kids in the building watching this cool punk band. And then later on, they were going to have so what would happen is that everyone would just leave at intermission when they figured this out. So then they started having the sermon first opening for the punk band, which was just like I understood why they did that. But then just everyone just stopped going entirely because we're just like, no.
Oh, my gosh. That's
crazy. Everyone just gave up. I cannot even put up with 15 minutes of this shit. I will simply not go.
No.
Were the punk bands Christian in nature, or were they like irreligious?
It was a combo. Sometimes there would just be like a cool local band that just like, didn't give a shit or would openly mock it while they were during their set. And then sometimes it would be like a Christian
openly
band. You never knew what you were getting until you showed up there. Oh, yeah. Well, because the kids are shitheads, especially like, the punk rock scene. It's like, that's all about nihilism and just like, gave me a venue, but I don't give a shit. Fuck you. I'll stick my thumb in your eye. So there was some of that, but then there was also like, this is some hardcore band, but I didn't realize they were Christian. They opened with a prayer. Yeah. And then that makes the whole, that also made it less fun because it was like, well, now this is not this is not like a sacrilegious thing anymore. Now this is just like, I'm just watching a Christian band in a church.
Yo, what's more punk than taking communion? Turn to your left and grab a cup. And drink at the same time. Yeah, I could see
rebel it. Against your fleshly desires. Yeah, it's like, oh, all right.
Gracious. Yes. Oh, yeah. I feel like MXPX could be like a perfect sort of punk band that would straddle that line. I don't know if they were ever part of that scene there in Long Beach. But yeah,
I never saw them there, but I remember hearing about MXPX, and I remember them being like, I remember there was like, wait, are they Christian or not? It was like Amy Grant. It was like, wait, is she Christian? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean that's the goal, right?
That line
is someone who makes you think one thing nor the other, and they're like, you got to come to the show and find out. I'm not gonna tell you before. You got to come and see for yourself. Yes. So the oftentimes, Weiger, we do a segment on this show called Cover Me, where we try to go to YouTube, the great streaming resource, my favorite streaming platform and service, YouTube.com, and we try to see what's the best, most interesting, most weird cover that we can find of the particular song that we're talking about. And the only commonality I could really find in the YouTube covers, because oftentimes you find some strange high school choir doing it or a college a cappella group a la Caroline's Bread and Butter. Caroline, what was the name of that group again you were in at
Random
UCLA?
Random Voices.
Absolutely. Wow. Random Voices. The commonality I found with the covers of To Hell with the Devil on YouTube is that it was a lot of women taking the song on, which almost makes sense given the vocal range of the song. Really? So here's one from a woman named Brittany J. Smith.
He's just a liar and a thief. The world tells us so.
Honestly good.
We like to let him know where he can go. To
wow, I feel like I'm watching.
Like kind of like,
yeah, she knows her angles. She
like
knows
winking
it.
At you.
Yeah,
and there's a few more similar to that.
Very. That was. I mean, she's great and very goth. I was
very
like
goth.
The black lipstick, the makeup. Yeah, very much. I wonder if that's like, are you? That's always a thing of like, wait, are you a Christian goth or are you a goth? And this is kind of your like, I'm ironically doing this Christian song. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I knew a lot of Christian
goths. You could probably find
goths.
Out by digging in her profile.
I went to a Christian high school, and there were a lot of Christian goths and a lot of Christian metalheads.
You knew a lot
well.
Of Christian goths too, Caroline. I know we talked about Christian goths like a couple of weeks ago, I think. But I have such a soft spot for those kind of kids who are able to like maintain their identity and be into that thing while still have like some sort of faith identity. I think it's just
it
so
it couldn't have been easy to do. Yeah.
No.
No, just walking contradictions.
Yeah, I want to be a double outcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
To one, two, three reasons for people to make fun of me.
Yeah.
Well, gang, anything else to talk about with this song? Any crack or crevice of the lyrics we left uninvestigated or uninterrogated? I don't know. I think we got into all 17 words that make up the lyrics of the song.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, just... Oh, I mean, Weiger, you first.
The refrain of To Hell with the Devil is just so intoxicating. It's great. And also, I think as a kid, I just remember that like being like, whoa, that's cool. Like, whoa, To Hell with the Devil. Like thinking that was like cool and like clever. It kind of is.
Well, and it's so... Baroque in a way. I don't know if that's quite the right word,
right.
But like, oh, pish posh, to hell with you, to hell with the devil.
Yeah.
It feels like something that would sound Downtown Abbey or something like that. But it is also like, you know, and we want to have empathy on this show and see things from multiple perspectives and from viewpoints and vantage points. For the devil, do you think he's like, fine, baby, I already live here? Like, okay.
He's like, that's no punishment.
It's an easy trip.
Yeah.
Like it's To Hell with the Devil, his version of traveling during quarantine, where it's like, I traveled from the kitchen to the living room. Like, is that?
Yeah, wait, is Stryper basically wishing the devil like his version of Maui? You know?
Oh no!
Right.
Oh no. Is this
a pro devil song?
Oh, it's a very pro devil song. It's a self-care song for the devil. It's stay at home devil.
Oh my god.
Yeah, because also the devil would love to be called a liar and a thief. This is actually very complimentary.
Yeah, this is my shit. You got it.
He's like, thank you.
What else? Yeah, what else am I? Ooh, baby.
Oh no. Sniper.
Oh gosh. So yeah. Okay. Well then that's interesting, a little ambiguity. Are they pro or anti devil? Which devil is the funniest version of this word? Rather than Satan, rather than Lucifer, Beelzebub.
Oh, for sure.
Devil is just the roundest, most like, I don't even know if it's rotund. It's just so broad and cartoony. I love it. And by the way, we should add, we were going to have Wygron with his partner, Mike Mitchell, the Spoon Man, from Doughboys, but at the last minute he dropped out because he thought we were gonna have the devil himself on, and he's famously very scared of the devil and did not want to do it. So he couldn't make it. He left the Zoom immediately, and there was a mid-shaped hole in my computer screen.
One of the only things that Mitch is humorless about is the prospect of him actually going to hell. Like, it's just like, he'd be like, haha, no, but I'm not going to hell though. Like, I'm not.
Just to circle back, make sure everybody knows it's not gonna happen.
Oh, gracious. Well, speaking of hell, let's send this song to hell or to heaven. The way this works, Wygers, we're gonna give it a holy toast or holy roast.
Mm.
Holy toast is a thumbs up. And that's when we send it to heaven, where the angels will be toasting it forever and ever. That's a song by DC Talk, one of your touch points. Or,
oh, hell yeah.
We send it to hell.
To hell!
Which that is the drop we've used for going on 4 years on this show.
Crazy.
And finally, we're here to discuss this song and this band. Or if we're not sure one way or the other, there's, of course, purgatory, a la
the space between.
So those are our three options, and we'll start, as we often do, with Caroline.
Well, I think that this guy is a great singer. Mm-hmm. That really appealed to me and got me excited. That got me out of my seat. I do like to rock. And I like that they chose a side on this war, and they were kind of causing some waves, enough that they had to lie to their record company so that they didn't have to cause that much of a wave, but then they came back around. But I like this song. I think it's fun, and it's such a weird, non-threatening threat to the devil. Mm-hmm. And so I think the best thing I can do is also be Team Striper and do what the devil hates and send this song to heaven where he can't even be.
Ooh, wow. Baby. Mm-hmm. Reverse double takeout. Holy toast from Caroline. Wyger, what say you?
Boy, I was going to go holy toast all the way, but the drop being this song makes it so tempting to send it down to hell keep the devil company. Yeah. But
and Carman, which is a Christian artist I was obsessed with, Satan, who recently passed away this year, and he's probably in hell.
Right now. Boy. Oh, boy. R.I.P. I think the I'm going to say... I like this song though. Like, I think it's like, it's corny as hell, but a lot of hair metal of this era is corny as hell. And I think the Sweetie Pie's got pipes. And I think it absolutely, again, could be an Iron Maiden song, or like if this was a Darkness song or a Dragon Force song, some contemporary like throwback metal artists, like people, I think it would fit right into their catalog. So I'm going holy toast. Send it up to heaven.
Yes.
Holy toast. Oh, man. You know, for me personally, I'm in the same dilemma as Wyger, where it's like, what is the right, most proper rating for this particular song? And what would Satan despise the most? Because if we're trying to slam Satan, then what would he hate? And would it be to be like torment? Because if they're playing to hell with the devil in heaven, can he even hear that shit? It's so far away from hell. Mm. But if he's in hell, and it's a song compliment, there's just so many paradoxes here for us to consider. Yes. But ultimately, I'm easily peer pressured, so I'm going to give it a holy toast as well to be like my friends.
Wow.
So that's my rating. You, the listener, can give it your own rating. Go to @ChristianFunPod on Twitter. Get out there and...
Pokemon, go to the polls.
Guess what? Close the economy.
The Pokemon go to the polls drop, which is also from hell as well. But now it's time to bring it down. You know, it's a rare daytime record for one of these episodes, but even still, we are dimming the lights in here. We are lighting the candles in here. We're turning on those washy, sweet scents. And Weiger, we're not here like, you know, like on your shows, people come on and they promote their stuff and plug their projects and they yes. work for the glory of man and for the approval of their peers. We're not here to do that. We're here for the glory of God. So we're going to lift those things up to God. And by lift those things up, I mean our social media handles where people can find us, our projects, and maybe even something right. that they're enjoying in secular culture right now. And we'll start, as we often do, with Caroline.
Mm. If you see me online, you're seeing me glorify God. And if you want to be a part of that, if you want to join that movement, you can follow me at Caroline's Farts. For the lift up this week, I'm going to lift up the Bible game episode of How Did This Get Played? Oh. And I enjoyed it so much. And Nate and I, my husband and I, listened to that show. We die. I love Heather Ann Campbell, Matt Apodaca.
We love
the show.
Matt. Friend of the pod, yes.
Just so wow. fun. And wasn't Paul F. Tompkins the guest on that one, mm-hmm. too?
Mm-hmm. That's right, yes.
So they're yeah, all they're so, all I mean, friends kind of an all-star except for Heather.
yeah, yeah. Heather, your time is coming soon, and that yes. is a threat. So I lift that up. It's such a funny show and really, really delightful to listen to.
Mm-hmm. That was a
God
great. I will
you.
Say
Thank
as like as I sunk more into quarantine depression gaming. How Did This Get Played was a wonderful companion to a newbie like me. And it was so yes. great to listen to stuff and then inappropriately text Weiger like, hey, here's what I thought of this game. And he's like, okay.
I love it.
Moved on.
Maybe just tweet at us.
Never.
Thanks, Caroline. We'll turn it to Weiger.
That was very, very nice, Caroline. Very, very nice of both of you. Thank you so much. I will, yeah, check out How This Get Played with Heather Ann Campbell and Matt Apodaca. We review the worst and weirdest video games of all time. And check out Doughboys, a podcast about chain restaurants with me and Mike Mitchell.
Great.
Yeah, check that out. Just at Nick Weiger on Twitter, which I just used to post those podcasts. Mm-hmm. And...
Yeah, you've backed off. I think you've successfully backed off from Twitter usage, it feels like. Like, you've really stuck to the, like, I don't know, like, you probably have some phone etiquette, maybe, where you'd keep it off your phone or
yeah.
something. And
I just was, It was the depths of quarantine. I was so buried in it. I was just like, this is, and I was just like, I just felt like I was just in the muck the whole time. I felt like I was just mm-hmm. in a big pit of mud and I was just throwing mud on myself. And I was like, what am I doing here? I'm not enjoying this.
Sloppy little pig.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Twitter.
I felt like a yeah. I
deserve
it. Sorry,
I apologize.
It was real, yeah. So I was just like, I tried to just shake myself out of it, and so I'm just taking. I don't know if I'll come back and not as avidly as I was on it before, but right now I'm just mm-hmm. kind of having all that stuff at arm's length. But as for something to check out, something to enjoy, I'll always boost. If we're looking for a video game, I'll always boost yeah. Stardew Valley. Especially if you're a non-gamer and you're just looking for something to pass the time, and maybe you don't have a Nintendo Switch, so you can't play Animal Crossing, or maybe you played Animal Crossing to death, and you're looking for something that's adjacent to it that has maybe a little bit more depth, and you play on every platform. Check out Stardew Valley. It's on everything. It's on Switch if you got Switch. It's on PC if you got PC. Whatever console you got, PlayStation, Xbox, it's so fun. And it was a labor of love by one guy. One dude, Eric Barone, AKA Concerned Ape, made it all, did the whole game himself, programmed the mm-hmm. engine, did all the design, did all the art, did all the music. It's a really incredible labor of love that's
all
very,
the art
very addictive
and the music
and fun to play.
Too?
He did all of it, yeah. He's basically locked himself in a room for 5 years and made it.
Kind of the Bo Burnham of video games.
Yeah.
Weiger, I tried to get Caroline on that Stardew Valley like a year ago, and she said, the graphics are ugly to me.
I just
it is like a
Animal
throwback
Crossing,
aesthetic,
which is so beautiful, you know. No, but I've always kept it in the back of my mind as like something to play when I need it, because I'm not really a gamer either. But I do love games like Animal Crossing, things that are simple, don't require a lot of dexterity, you know. So
this is very much that. It's just you know, you grow your farm and you
love
find
that.
Yourself a spouse.
Love that. That's the dream. Crops and being a wife guy. You can lift me up at Kevin T. Porter everywhere. I will lift up a podcast called The Ringer Music Show. It's hosted by Charles Holmes and Grace Spellman. It's a phenomenal topical music show, especially if you don't have a good handle on what's going on in music ever at any time, and it seems absolutely overwhelming, but you're still compelled by it. It's a very funny and fun entryway and access point into Olivia Rodrigo, who? Deja what? Driver's license? I don't know what that is. So check that out. Grace is very, very funny, as is Charles. And you can lift us up at Christian Fun Pod everywhere. You can go to patreon.com/goodchristianfun for more good Christian fun. And you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Every review you leave, we donate $1 to charity. This one's charity for one last time, for one last ride, is My Refuge House. Weiger, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
What a damn delight. You know, we're talking about To Hell with the Devil. This podcast was heaven today. It was terrific.
Wow.
What a nice time. And you're a little baby angel. Caroline, you're always a little baby angel. And
a little bit of a devil, too.
Okay. Yeah, she's a little baby angel, but then she turns around. It's like, wait, there's a pointy tail coming out of her. Oh, no. And there's nothing left to say except for, in all pods, people said,
Amen. To the devil.
You know, and for a change of pace, I want to go out with another Striper song that's from the same album that couldn't sound more different. This song called Honestly. It sounds like an Air Supply song, essentially.
Yeah.
Very
gotta have a banger,
saccharine.
Gotta have a ballad. That was the middle of the 80s.
And it picks up, but you know, this is kind of what it sounds like. So let this drift you off to sleep as you dream of the three of us. And we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.